Today's Minnesota Reads is made possible by the bookstore at Fitker's, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitker's on Superior Street. Online at fitkersbookstore.com. Well, this morning, if you knew that Tom Isbell was going to be our guest on the show this morning, you might have thought, oh, good, I'll settle in for a few minutes of laughs and yucks. No laughs, no yucks. Not this morning. Tom is a theater professor here at UMD, and we've had him on the air talking about his experiences as a director and his experiences as a professional actor. And all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, it turns out that you're... Now, I knew you were a playwright also.
Right.
But all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, it turns out that you've written this big Mongo work of fiction for young readers.
How'd that happen?
What can't you do?
I can't ride a unicycle, and I would like to very much.
The next chapter of Tom Isbell, and we'll have the story right here on 103.3 KUMD.
Nice.
The book is out, going to be out next week. It comes out
next Tuesday, the 20th.
Da, 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 da.
Yep.
So, do you remember what was the first thought that led to the book? Did you get a little cerebral tempest about a plot or a character or a setting? Did you hear a line of dialogue in your head and you went, I have to write a book about that? What was the first thought? Do you remember?
That's a good question. I don't know that I've ever had a cerebral tempest, but thank you for assuming that I might have. Actually, you know, I don't really work this way. Normally, things are very gradual. They kind of seep in. I'm kind of an osmosis kind of person. But on this occasion, it was a very distinct thought. We were heading home from a vacation in Colorado. We're heading down the mountain. My wife, Pat, was reading a Stephen King book, so I kept the radio off. And as we're going down the mountain, I just had this idea of less thans, of dividing up the world into haves and have-nots, and creating these young protagonists, 16-year-old, who are being raised for purposes other than what they think.
So when you accept your book award, you'll thank Stephen King and your
yes.
wife, of course.
That's right.
Of course,
that's right.
For this. when, in your mind, did the book be... Well, backing up a bit, you've written screenplays, and that's kind of a natural... That sort of makes sense, because I think anyone who's ever spent some time in theater thinks, I'd love to write a play.
Right, exactly.
But did this come to you as, oh, this might make a play? Or did the plot come with book attached to it?
This was book, and in actuality, I've actually been writing books for 20 years. None have gotten published, with the exception of one other, but it only got published in Germany and Spain. It got translated. I have an agent who sold it to publishers over there. They translated it and published it there, but no American publishers bought it. So
I should go back and make a quick correction, because I do have a copy of your nonfiction book on acting.
I do have that. That's true.
You
yes.
have written, but I guess, you know, to me that was sort of an offshoot again of the
yes.
of the theater thing.
Exactly.
So, but you've been writing fiction.
Yeah.
So at what point did this book say to you, or did you say to the book, young adult?
From the very beginning, and I don't know why, the very first book I wrote 20, 25 years ago was young adult, and then I went into kind of thrillers and adult thrillers and things like that.
But, Tom, you were a young adult at that time.
And now... That was a lot longer than 25 years ago.
You're a grown-up.
No, well, that's not true either.
Okay.
I'm still looking for a cerebral tempest.
Ah, good.
So I think from the very beginning, but I thought it would be more interesting if the protagonists were young and had to deal with a society where the adults were kind of placing these constrictions on them.
So, I'm reading the book, and I'm reading the book with an eye toward the fact that I know you and that
right.
we've done interviews before, and I'm thinking, what does it say about this person psychologically that he created this post-apocalyptic world that your imagination immediately went to, this grim, blasted, really dark place? Are you darker than anyone has ever suspected?
Yeah, I am. My wife calls me the Prince of Darkness. She knows. She
okay.
knows.
Okay.
Well, I love the dystopian genre. I mean, I love The Stand. I love Justin Cronin's book, The Passage and The 12. You know, I love The Road, Cormac McCarthy. I just love those books. And so you know, I think you write what you want to read. So I thought, so for me, it was kind of a natural to write that. The other great thing about dystopian is you get to create the rules because it's a whole new world. And so, okay, well, what's the rules of the world now in this post-apocalyptic setting?
And yet, in order to make it resonate, I think, as truth with readers, there have to be rules, but they have to be consistent. I mean,
yes.
It can't be, you know, oh, well, then I'll just imagine wire cutters and I'll get right out of this fence or whatever it might
be. Right,
I mean, there have to be rules and they have to be consistent.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Follow their own internal logic. You went really dark, though. You went Holocaust kind of dark.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, I think that came from all this research that I've done on the Holocaust with the play Dear Finder that we've done a couple of times at UMD. And, you know, the big lesson of the Holocaust, right, was never forget, never again. And yet we just see the same kind of hate crimes and genocides and marginalizations. We see it happening over and over again, the resurgence of anti-Semitism in Europe, everywhere. So for me, it's a lesson that we're still learning. So the other aspect of the book, in addition to wanting to tell just a good action-adventure story, was also to kind of tell us in another way, to say, it's kind of a cautionary tale, this could happen again. You know, if we're in this situation, people could lay blame and create scapegoats and create a society that's heavily divided.
It's always the other. It's always that
it
fear
is.
Of the other.
Exactly.
That we just can't seem to move past as a society.
We're really good at that. You know, that's one thing we're really good at is our fear of the other.
Fear, we rock that. Yay us. The book will invite, I think, some comparisons inevitably to the Hunger Games.
Sure.
It's futuristic. There are these frightening authoritarian presences. There's this caste system. There's hunting a group of kids. You're going to be going out onto book tours and being feted, walking down red carpets, being interviewed on Entertainment Tonight, no doubt, about this book. And how do you plan to, you know, how do you plan to address that and move past it?
I guess the similarity is it is dystopian and it is young adults who are dealing with authoritarian adult figures, but it's pretty different. I mean, the world is pretty different, and the big thing about the Hunger Games is that the kids are trying to kill each other. In this, they don't do that. They need each other. And it's not so much any sense of games. It's a much more realistic setting, I think, than Hunger Games. I like the Hunger Games enormously, but it's, you know, it's somewhere in the American West, and they're just trying to escape to another part of the country where they think it'll be safer. So it's more, for me, it's kind of like, it's one part The Stand and one part Lonesome Dove. You know, it's like a cattle drive without the cattle in dystopia. Post-apocalyptic America of the future.
And without Robert Duvall or Tommy Lee Jones.
Exactly. Sorry.
I don't really see the point. Sorry.
They could be in the movie version. Right?
I'm liking that. Okay. So, did you, when you write a novel, do you suddenly find, maybe not suddenly, but do you find that Tom Isbell theater guy, Tom Isbell actor pops up, particularly when you're writing dialogue? How does that experience and that training inform you as a writer? Maybe add an extra little skill set.
Well, I hope that the dialogue is truer than maybe it wouldn't be if I didn't spend so much time in the theater. I mean, every day is an acting class, and every day we're dealing with scenes, and so I just hear dialogue over and over again and hear good dialogue and dialogue that's not as effective. So I hope that informs me one way or the other. And of course, my own kind of silliness and hanging out with the likes of Ryan Gallagher.
Who, your muse.
My muse.
Your ruddy-headed muse.
Yes, thank you.
I had asked you, likely, I said, did you base any of the characters on Ryan Gallagher? You said they are all Ryan Gallagher.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Ryan, actually, I spent a 4-hour phone conversation with him on Sunday on another book. He reads everything I write and gives the most detailed notes. We have these 4-hour conversations every so many months, and he's brutal. And he's very specific. He's quite good. Anyway, the point I was going to say is that that gets me in trouble sometimes because I will want to write more humor in the book, and my editor will say, that's maybe not quite appropriate for this section. So that's why you have editors, to kind of keep you on the straight and narrow.
If we only had editors in life.
I know.
Now, you're a man that sort of, like, lives in this bubble of creativity. You teach theater, you are a director, and you've got the whole theater acting part of your life. You've got this writing part of your life that nobody until now knew that you were doing constantly. What's next? Do you see... First of all, what is it about you when you think about yourself and you think, boy, I've got this creative energy in me that's just... I'm bursting at the seams with creative energy. Do you think about that, or do you think, no, that's just how I am, man. That's just how I roll.
That's how I say it. That's just how I roll.
Yeah,
that's how I say it. Yeah. I don't think of it that way so much. It's just that there are stories I want to tell, and whether it's an existing play that I want to direct, or whether it's a play I want to write, or it's a book I want to write, it's just, you know, I just want to tell stories like a child. So that's all it is to me. And I just have dedicated time to do it, and I hope I get better at it.
Have you had any thought about using radio, perhaps, as a medium in which you could combine the writing and the performance aspect of telling stories?
Well, when Ryan and I did our radio show here...
Which was a different kind of art altogether.
There wasn't much writing involved.
No, there was no writing. There was no research. There was no preparation involved.
Winging is a word that comes to mind.
Yeah,
yeah. Wow, those were good times.
They were indeed good times.
Yeah.
But there may be a place. There may be there may be a new medium for you here.
I'm open to anything.
Do you ever say to yourself, "I think I want to learn to paint"?
I would love to learn to paint. I did try a couple years ago to starting with sketching, but here's the issue with that is I'm a slow writer. I have to write every single day, I find that all the other things I want to do, get better at piano, learn the ukulele, those just go by the wayside because when I have free time, I just need to write. So there aren't enough hours in the day, as we all know.
So what about this next book that you're working on that Ryan is brutalizing even as we speak?
Yeah, he's finished brutalizing it for now, this latest draft. I can't talk much about it because it's a new series. This, I'm still writing, book two of this series is with the copy editor now, and I'm working on book three. But I've also, in my free time, there's another book that I just had a story that I had to tell, and so I've been working on it for a year and a half, and Ryan read a draft last March, and he read a draft this weekend, and I've got another 6 months or a year before I'll share it.
Wow. Tom Isbell, the man who cannot stop telling stories.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us. Tom Isbell is the author of a new book called The Prey, and its sequel, as he mentioned, is also where the next volume is at the copy editors. Many more stories on the way from our Tom Isbell here at UMD. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and also by the bookstore at Fitker's, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitker's on Superior Street. Online at fitkersbookstore.com.